Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Straight from the Source, streaming to you on the Heritage Radio Network at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, this and every Wednesday afternoon. My name is Clay Gordon, and in the nearly 20 years that I've been following the chocolate industry, literally from tree to mouth, I visited cacao farms throughout the Americas and spent time with farmers, merchants, and some of the world's best chocolate makers. Growing cacao is very hard work, and it's hard not to notice that farmers are often not paid fairly for the work that they do. Straight from the Source is inspired by those experiences with a mission of exploring issues in fair and ethical sourcing in cacao, chocolate, coffee, and other foods, with participants involved in every link of the supply chain, from growers to producers to chefs, certification bodies, and organizations interested in promoting the concept of good food. Today's topic is how to read a label on a chocolate bar. And you might find this a little surprising. It's like, why do I need to pay attention to what's on a chocolate bar label? But it turns out that you can learn a great deal, and there are huge differences from bar to bar to bar. And also, there are some things that you can't tell from a label, and that will be the subject of the second half of today's program. The first thing to know about chocolate and what goes on a label is it's all regulated by the U.S. government. There is what is called a standard of identity in the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 21, Part 163, which covers what can and cannot be in chocolate. There is a standard of identity for sweet chocolate, and that standard covers both semi-sweet and bittersweet chocolate. There's also a standard for milk chocolate, as well as a standard for white chocolate. Surprisingly, there is no standard for dark chocolate. Now, many people come to me and say, hey, Clay, there's no such thing as white chocolate. And I have to say that legally that's not true in the United States. Because there is a standard of identity for white chocolate, manufacturers can create something which is called white chocolate as long as it has all of the correct ingredients and none of the things which are not allowed. So even though you may say, well, it doesn't have any cocoa powder, the brown stuff that gives chocolate its color, because it doesn't have any cocoa powder, it can't legally be called chocolate. Yes, in fact, or can't legally be called chocolate. That's right. Yes, it can. Right. Whether you like it or not is another question altogether. Many of the people who like white chocolate do so because of the texture, because there's no cocoa powder in it. It has this very, very smooth mouthfeel. It's basically nothing but fat to which sugar has been and a little bit of milk has been added. And so, you know, who doesn't like a sweet fat? So if we look at the back of a chocolate bar label, and I'm using a label from last week's tasting, the Green and Black's 70%, and we'll get to percentage a little later, organic label, and it says that the ingredients are organic bittersweet chocolate. And after that, it says organic chocolate, organic raw cane sugar, organic cocoa butter, soy lecithin, vanilla extract, and organic whole milk powder. Now, this is a little unusual because often the chocolate ingredient is separated out into its constituent parts. So you may see a label that says dark chocolate, and after that it says organic cocoa liquor or cocoa mass. And cocoa liquor and cocoa mass are names for the same thing. It's just ground up cocoa beans to which nothing else has been added. And even though it's called cocoa liquor, it's not alcoholic. And the reason why it's called cocoa liquor, why the word liquor is used, is lost in the mists of antiquity. Nobody really understands, or I haven't at least been able to find, a good story that says this is why it's called chocolate liquor. So if you're looking at a chocolate, and it's good to know that the first ingredient does in fact come from cocoa beans. And that's usually the case with a chocolate with a high cocoa percentage. cocoa beans would be the number one ingredient. Sugar would be the number two ingredient. If they're adding any extra cocoa butter, that would be the number three ingredient. The number four and five ingredients are going to be lecithin, which is used to make processing the chocolate easier, and then also some form of vanilla. Sometimes you'll see a little bit of salt. Salt is a great thing in chocolate. It works exactly the same way that salt does in almost any other food as a flavor enhancer. And it's actually quite surprising that more chocolate doesn't include salt as part of the ingredients. What is vanilla? If you see the vanilla ingredient, sometimes it will say vanilla. It might say vanilla extract. If it doesn't say vanilla extract, it could say whole vanilla beans, or it could say vanillin or ethyl vanillin. If you're concerned in eating a high quality chocolate, certainly what you're interested in looking for is a natural form of vanilla. A chocolate maker that is using whole vanilla beans is obviously spending more money for the ingredient than somebody is using vanillin, which is an artificial form of the of vanilla. It is a concentrate of the primary aroma molecule or the flavor molecule of vanilla. It's often processed from the waste from paper processing. It comes from the lignin in paper fibers. And if you get vanillin or ethyl vanillin as a flavoring in chocolate, what will happen is that the vanilla flavor will be very one note. Many chocolate makers decide that they don't want to put vanilla into their chocolate and prefer just to let the flavor of the cocoa come through. Vanilla was originally added. The chocolate industry calls it a masking aroma or a masking flavor, and most chocolates are made from blends of cocoa beans. And if I roast the beans in a slightly different way to account for the differences in the flavor of the bean from harvest to harvest, and I change the blends slightly, again from harvest to harvest, I'll still end up with minor differences in flavor. And if I'm concerned with making sure that the flavor is the same from batch to batch to batch, then if I put in a little vanilla over the top, that makes getting the flavor more consistent, a whole lot easier for the chocolate manufacturer to do. And that's why you'll find vanilla in chocolate. You'll notice that Green and Black's, the label, says dark and 70%. But that it also contains whole milk powder. In its allergen statement, it lists milk and the fact that the equipment is processed in a facility that processes tree nuts. But it doesn't list a milk as an allergen. And one of the reasons to read a label very closely is, ooh, here is a whole milk powder as an ingredient that's not listed in the allergen statement. And so if you're not careful about how you read the label and you are in fact lactose intolerant, it could be a problem for you. 70%, what does that mean? 70% refers to the amount of the chocolate bar by weight, which comes from the cocoa bean itself. So in a 100-gram bar of chocolate that says 70% cocoa, that means that 70% or 70 grams by weight is derived from the cocoa bean. Now, we don't know, however, how much of that is cocoa fat, and how much of that is the non-fat cocoa solids or the cocoa powder, all right? In general, cocoa beans are between 45% and 55% fat, but it would be possible to get to a 70% cocoa having 1% cocoa solids and 1% and 69% cocoa fat, or we could have something which was a very high cocoa powder content and a very low cocoa butter content. In general, that doesn't happen. The cocoa butter is required for fluidity. It is required so that the chocolate has a good mouthfeel. It has a good properties of being able to go into the mold. And that's one of the reasons why lecithin is added. It's called an emulsifier, although chocolate is not an emulsion. It's technically a suspension. What the lecithin does is bind with the water, takes the water out of the suspension, and lowers the viscosity, makes the chocolate a thinner and easier to pour. There's a great deal of concern about genetically modified organisms, and GMO lecithin is almost always made from soybeans, and a very high percentage of soybeans are grown from genetically modified seeds. So you may want to look very closely if you are concerned about GMO in your food, whether or not the lecithin specifically says that is made from non-GMO soybeans. People often confuse percentage of cocoa with quality. A 70% chocolate bar is better than a 65% chocolate bar because it has 5% more cocoa. And there is no direct correlation between cocoa content and quality. None whatsoever. I mean, if you go out and you buy a bar simply because it's 70%, you really don't understand much about, or you don't understand everything you need to know about the way chocolate bars are constructed. It would be like going into a store and buying a bottle of vodka and thinking that 86-proof vodka was better than 80-proof vodka just because it had 3% more alcohol. That's not true unless the sole reason you're buying the vodka is to get drunk, in which case price is a factor. But it doesn't tell you anything about the quality of ingredients that were used to make the vodka. It doesn't tell you anything about the care that the distiller used in making the vodka. And the same thing is true in chocolate. 70% doesn't tell you anything about the quality of the cocoa beans that was used. It doesn't tell you anything about the care in manufacturing. And it doesn't say anything about flavor. I mean, I can take a bean and roast it so that it is burnt and have a pretty lousy, bitter, icky, right, really, really awful chocolate experience. I can take a very high-quality cocoa bean, roast it properly, create a 70% chocolate that is so well done, you'd swear it was a much lower percentage of a cocoa. So don't go just by cocoa percentage when you think about buying a chocolate bar. It actually doesn't tell you it doesn't tell you what you think it might be telling you. A lot of people ask about vegan chocolate. Certainly looking at one of the labels here today, it says suitable for vegetarians. And so people go, ooh, you know, what about vegan chocolate? The issue with vegan chocolate, believe it or not, is the sugar that is used to make the chocolate. If you have a very, very strict ingredient and process definition of veganism, then it's good to know that the cane syrup, which comes off the crushed cane, sugar cane, is often filtered through charcoal. And it's often very difficult, next to impossible, to guarantee that there are no animal remains in the charcoal that is used to filter the cane syrup. So if you have a very strict definition of what veganism means, if you have cane syrup that's filtered through charcoal, then chances are the chocolate that you're eating is not suitable for vegans. So you'd look for an evaporated organic cane syrup, something which hadn't been filtered, which was dark in color, but using sugar like that imparts a flavor because the sugar itself has a flavor. One of the reasons why chocolate makers like to use refined white sugar is that from a flavor perspective, it has the most neutral flavor. It doesn't add a lot of its own flavor. And as a matter of fact, there's a brightness to it, which is very, very attractive. Not overly sharp, not overly bright, but there is a brightness. And it's certainly not very muddy because of the ingredients that aren't in there. Now, I noticed that one of the labels that I have here today says that it's gluten-free. And I often wonder about chocolate makers who tout that their chocolates are gluten-free because chocolate is cocoa, is by its very definition a gluten-free food. A chocolate that is labeled as a gluten-free chocolate probably means that the manufacturer has taken some care to ensure that there are no other processes going on anywhere in the factory where some traces of a gluten-containing substance might be able to get into the chocolate. So those are some of the things that reading a chocolate bar will tell you. The percentage of cocoa, which doesn't tell you anything about the taste. The 70% chocolate, all that means is about 30% of the bar is sugar. That's all it tells you. Ingredients, what's cocoa mass, what's cocoa liquor. If sugar is the first ingredient, it's going to be a sweet chocolate, as opposed to if chocolate is the first ingredient and sugar is the second ingredient. Little things to let you know a little bit about the tasting experience that you're about to have, and the care and that the manufacturer has gone through in order to make the chocolate, but also, and we'll get into this in the next segment of the program, a dark chocolate that contains milk powder. What's that all about? So we're going to take a short break from learning how to read the label of a chocolate bar. And when we return to Straight from the Source on Heritage Radio Network, we'll be taking a look at some of the things labels don't tell you.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Clay Gordon, creator and moderator of thechocolatelife.com and author of the IACP finalist book, Discover Chocolate. Today I'm talking about labels, chocolate bar labels specifically, how to read them, what they say, and what they don't. If we go back just a few minutes to the first part of the program, and talking about the standard of identity for chocolate, I mentioned that there was a standard of identity for white chocolate, a standard of identity for milk chocolate, and a standard of identity for something called sweet chocolate, which covers semi-sweet and bittersweet chocolate. But there is no standard of identity for dark chocolate. So even though you see dark chocolate on the label of many chocolate bars, from a legal standpoint, the word dark doesn't really tell you anything that you can rely on. And a case in point, one of the best examples of this is a Hershey product, Hershey's Special Dark Chocolate. If you go take a very close look at that label, what you'll do is you'll see that the phrase Special Dark is a registered trademark. And if you look even a little more closely, you'll see elsewhere on the label, it says that the chocolate is a mildly sweet chocolate. So what that tells you is that the chocolate fits within the definition of a sweet chocolate within the standard of identity, but that Special Dark has no meaning other than being a name which is a descriptor. There is no such thing legally as dark chocolate. And if you look at the back of the label, what you'll actually find in the ingredients is that there are several milk-derived ingredients. One of the most common is butter oil. Butter oil is sometimes called anhydrous milk fat. Those of you who are devotees of Indian cooking will know it, recognize it as ghee or clarified butter. Butter which has had all the water removed from it, which means that it won't burn when you cook it. The butter oil is used in making chocolate as a way of keeping the chocolate from blooming. It affects the way the fats melt together and interact with each other. It's similar to the process of annealing metal, a process called eutectics, for those of you who've had some pretty interesting physics or chemistry background, engineering background, may know a little bit about eutectics and alloying metal. The same thing is true when you mix fats together. Fat A and fat B, individually, they have different melting points, which means they'll have different hardnesses and mouthfeels. And when you mix them together, the sum of the parts is different from either of them. So chocolate manufacturers lobbied to be able to put butter oil and other kinds of fats in chocolate, legally still be able to call the product chocolate, in order to be able to increase the shelf life of the product without having to add a preservative. It affects mouthfeel and texture. It tends to be a little less expensive than cocoa butter is, but you can only add it in relatively small amounts by weight. Surprisingly, the United States is stricter than Europe when it comes to the definition of chocolate. In Europe, you can add up to 5% of non-cocoa butter fats, shea butter oil. They're called cocoa butter equivalents or cocoa butter replacements. You can add up to 5%. You have to indicate them on the label, but on the front, you can still call it chocolate. Here in the United States, it's not legal to add any significant amount of non-cocoa butter fat to a chocolate and still be able to call it a chocolate. Right, but take a look. If you are in fact sensitive to dairy, then a chocolate manufacturer that's using butter oil or anhydrous milk fat, you might want to be a little bit careful in having that chocolate, because even though the label says it is dark chocolate, there are in fact milk ingredients. And that's one of the things in looking at the Green and Blacks label you have to be very careful of, so that even though it says 70% dark chocolate, you look in the back and one of the ingredients is organic whole milk powder. And it's listed as an ingredient. Fortunately, it's right next to part of the label where they talk about allergens that are in the process or in the product, and that label says it contains soy, it contains milk, and it's manufactured on equipment that processes peanut and tree nuts. But you know, why is there milk in a dark chocolate? And it's actually quite surprising that there's whole milk powder as opposed to just a straight milk fat that's often found in other chocolates. But we're going to go from the Green and Black's organic chocolate and looking at things that the label does tell you to another Green and Black's chocolate, which is called Maya Gold. Maya Gold is one of Green and Black's probably best known products. It's made in part with beans that come from southern Belize, from the Toledo Cacao Growers Association, which is the first fair trade and certified organic cocoa cooperative in the world. And I've visited down there several times, the first time in 2007. I was there twice, 2008, 2010. And over the course of that time, a number of things happened. When I went down there for the first time, Green and Blacks had a full-time employee in Punta Gorda by the name of Gregor Hargrove, and Gregor was overseeing the operation of the Toledo Cacao Growers Association and helping them with their organic and fair trade certification efforts and making sure that whatever it is that the organic certification said and the fair trade certification said, that from Green and Black's perspective, everything was being followed to the letter, that if there was a bit of paperwork or a bit of reporting, it was taken care of. And they were also doing things like lobbying the Belizean government to keep from bringing in strains of cocoa that were not native to the region. They were being offered by a cacao research institute in Costa Rica. And he said, no, you know, this is, we want to be able to preserve the native strains that have been growing in the area for hundreds and thousands of years. We don't want to bring in something which is not indigenous the reason to this region. It hasn't been grown here. We don't know what it will produce. So, even though there's some money attached to bringing this cocoa into the country, it's not something we want to do. So Gregor was very, very pivotal in the formation of a code of behavior that Green and Blacks exhibited towards the farmers and helping the farmers in their efforts to make the most of the certification, both organic and fair trade. And Green and Blacks also did something very interesting, which is they guaranteed the market. What they said to the members of the local cocoa association, the Toledo Cacao Growers Association, is we will buy every cocoa bean that you bring to us. Now, you don't have to sell us 100% of the cocoa that you grow, but we will buy 100% of the cocoa that you bring to us, and we'll buy it irrespective of the quality, and we'll pay the fair trade price for everything. Well, that's pretty good for the farmers. The farmers know they have a guaranteed market and they're going to get a good price for their cocoa. It's not good in the sense that there's a disincentive. I mean, even if I bring in lousy cocoa, they'll pay the good price for it. So that in the long run, I don't think that was a good decision on the part of the Green and Blacks. But what they also were doing was buying the transitional cocoa. So in organic certification, there's a 3-year period from the time you file to the time you're granted your certificate and you can legally call your crop organically certified. And Green and Blacks would purchase all of that cocoa from the farmer in that 3-year transition period so that the farmer wasn't investing a lot more money, a lot more effort in growing an organic crop, but only getting the price of a conventional, non-certified cocoa. So Green and Blacks was doing some really, really wonderful things in the area. But then a couple of things happened. First one of which is that Cadbury purchased Green and Blacks. And shortly after that happened, unfortunately, Gregor died of a heart attack, I believe. And Cadbury decided that they weren't going to replace Gregor. And so what happened was that there was no law, even though when you think about a multi-billion dollar multinational corporation, the cost of one person to be able to ensure that, in fact, as a company, you are following through on the commitment that fair trade certification and organic certification imply, they decided that money involved was just too great. They weren't going to spend the money to have somebody down there. And so anytime there's no longer supervision, which is pretty regular. The certification visits are once a year or once every 2 years. When there's not somebody there all the time making sure that the interests of the chocolate company are in fact being looked after, then the reporting methods can be a little overlooked or a little sloppy, and you run the risk of, where is in fact, how is the money being used? Is the money always going where we think it's going? As consumers, we want to make sure that the money we're paying for certified product, organic or fair trade, is being used well. And then a couple of years later, you may know that Cadbury was purchased by Kraft. And now Kraft wants to move the manufacturing for Green and Blacks, much of the product, from Italy to the United States or to Canada. And one of the things that happened is that by doing that, they had to change the organic certifier. European certifiers are not the same as American certifiers until recently. I think this summer, there was no treaty that's allowed European certifiers to be accepted by American certifiers. And so if you wanted to have a certified product and sold in two different places, you need to have Europe and the United States, you need to have two different certifiers. And it turns out that the new certifier was much more strict about the separation of organic, transitional, non-organic cocoa beans. And Kraft stopped buying the transitional cocoa. So all of a sudden, you go from a place over the course of a few short years, even though it's the same company, you have a company whose policy is to buy all the cocoa, to pay the premium price for all the cocoa, irrespective of quality and whether or not all of the cocoa is covered under the certification processes, to a point where, well, we're no longer guaranteeing the market and we're no longer paying the premium price for all the cocoa that you bring to us. But none of that is actually on the label. I mean, it's a really important backstory about corporate social responsibility and how large corporations can use certifications of fair trade and organic to be able to suggest that they're doing wonderful things, when in fact it's hard to actually understand what they're doing and how what they're doing changes over time. A similar story here in the United States, Scharfenberger chocolate maker. Many people know and love Scharfenberger. It's a great product. It's important in the history of the American craft chocolate movement. Scharfenberger was the first small startup chocolate maker in the United States for something like more than 50 years when they opened up in the early 2000s. And it's quite possible to credit them. It's impossible to underestimate their importance in the creation of the modern craft chocolate movement here in the United States. Irrespective of what you think of the product, whether you like it or whether you don't like it, what they've done in terms of bringing an awareness to the American consumer of high quality chocolate and what it means to be a craft and artisan producer. It's quite a wonderful story. But if you look at a Scharfenberger label nowadays, it says manufactured by Scharfenberger chocolate maker in Robinson, Illinois. And you go, Robinson, Illinois? I thought Scharfenberger was in Berkeley. And until a couple of years ago, they were in Berkeley, but they got bought by a company called Artisan Confections Company. And it doesn't say it on the label, but Artisan Confection Company is a division of Hershey Foods. And that's one of the reasons why there is the manufacturing location for the chocolate is in Illinois, because shortly after purchasing Scharfenberger, they closed down the Berkeley plant and they moved all the manufacturing operations to Illinois. So there's no longer this fabulous factory tour. You can't go and see the entire process of how chocolate is made, free from bean to bar, and in a good scale, making quite a bit of chocolate every month, getting in there, getting your hands and understanding the entire process, because a very large multi-billion-dollar company has purchased them. At the same time that that Artisan Confections purchased Scharfenberger, they purchased also the Dagoba Chocolate Company. Many people know them as one of the first fair trade certified chocolate companies in the United States. They're still around. And they also purchased Joseph Schmidt, which is a San Francisco Bay icon. Joseph Schmidt, Hershey was unable to make the business a go, to take it from a strong regional player to a good national player, and being a publicly traded company, they were under pressure from their board of directors to shut Joseph Schmidt down, which they did. So unfortunately, the Bay Area lost one of its old standing and best-loved chocolate makers. And you wouldn't know that from reading the label, Artisan Confections Company, a subsidiary or a wholly owned subsidiary of Hershey Foods. And that's it for today. I've been talking about how to read a label of a chocolate bar, and also trying to give you a little bit of backstory on what labels don't say. I want to thank Jack Inslee for engineering today's show, and thank the rest of the Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network teams for their hard work building, maintaining, and growing HRN. Straight from the Source comes to you live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. If you have questions you'd like to hear answered on future programs, give us a call at 718-497-2128, email the show at info@heritageradionetwork.org, or contact me, Clay Gordon, through thechocolatelife.com. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.